So I'm Ding Yuan. I'm from University of Illinois and UC San Diego. And today I'm going to talk our work, context-based online configuration error detection. So this work is done in Microsoft Research together with Yinglian Xie, Rina Panigrahi, Jinfeng Yang, who is now in Columbia University, Chad Verbosky, and Arun Vijay Kumar. So configuration errors are the errors that are caused by erroneous settings to the software system instead of software system's own defect. And these errors might be caused either by the operator's human mistakes or software updates or even software bugs that mistakenly corrupted some configuration settings. And the failures caused by configuration errors might have huge impact. And for example, in 2009, a configuration error brought down all the website in Sweden under the .se domain. And the root cause was actually a simple missing of a dot character in the configuration setting. And not only configuration errors will result in huge impact for failures, they are also becoming the major root cause of today's system failures. So according to various studies, at least 25% of the today's system failures are caused by configuration errors. And this percentage number is likely to increase because, on the one hand, the continuous advance in bug detection tools will eliminate more and more software's own defect. But on the other hand, there is still a limited number of configuration error detection tools. Existing work on configuration errors focused on postmortem diagnosis. So although these applaudable work have made debugging configuration errors much simpler, they still rely on the human to detect the error symptom at the first place. And in this work, we argue that early detection of configuration errors is important as well. And I'll explain why using a real-world configuration error example. So on Microsoft Windows systems, the auto-update feature might be disabled by a configuration error. And in fact, this will leave the users cannot automatically get the updates or patches and leave the vulnerabilities open on their machines. And it is also a widely reported error. And since the error itself has no visible user symptoms, so a user might only notice it when his machine is eventually compromised. And in this example, we can clearly see that it will be very helpful if we can detect the configuration error early enough as it happens, so to prevent the final failure from occurring. And detect configuration error early can also provide valuable hints for postmortem failure diagnosis. So this is especially useful when the administrators are faced with a failure. They probably would not even know that the failure was caused by a configuration error at the first place. And finally, detecting configuration automatically can be especially useful in data center environments where a large number of servers are often left unattended. So it is precisely our goal in this work to automatically detect configuration errors. Then how do we detect them? Well, the first thought may be whenever the user makes a change to their configuration settings, we can just report an error. While this approach might catch all the errors, but they are also going to produce too many false alarms. For example, on a typical Windows system today, there are over tens of thousands of modifications every day to the Windows registry, which is the centralized storage of the configuration settings. And as you can guess, majority of these modifications are to some temporary registries. But then the next thought may be, we just manually pick some important configurations and monitor the change to them. For example, if a user makes a change to the user account, then we can report a warning. But unfortunately, the complexity of today's system also makes this manual effort impossible. So for example, on a typical Windows system, there are over 200,000 of configuration entries. So the key challenge to detect configuration errors is to differentiate the true abnormal configuration changes from the vast majority of normal changes that are merely noises. And our approach is based on two simple observations. So the first observation is that only those configurations that are later read by the system matters. So if a change happened to a configuration data, but this data is never going to be read again by the system, then probably this change will not impact the system execution. So instead of focusing on configuration data and the change of configuration data itself, in our work, we focus on the read of configuration data by the process. And we refer to these operations as configuration access event. And our second observation is that the sequence of events are not random. They are repetitive and predictable because they often externalize the program's own control flows. So for example, a process might access the configuration in the order of A, B, C, D. And if it is always repetitive and always repeat in this order, then if later we see a deviation from this sequence, then it is likely an error. So based on these two simple observations, in this work we present a tool called CODE, which is, to the best of our knowledge, the first online configuration error detection tool. So it is effective that it can detect configuration errors on the fly, and it's also comprehensive that we monitor all the process on the entire operating system. We have shown that it has reasonably low false positive, and it can also provide rich diagnostic information. And finally, it is lightweight with low overhead. So here's the outline of the talk. Next, I'll describe some background of configurations and a motivating example, followed by design and implementation, evaluation, related work, limitation, and before I can finally conclude. So in this work, we focus on detect configuration errors on Microsoft Windows systems. So on Microsoft Windows, a centralized repository is used called the Windows Registry. It's used to store all the configuration settings. And these settings include both software, hardware, and the user settings. So the Windows Registry is stored as key value pair, where each key closely resembles a file system path. So in this example, the key auto update is under the subkey of Windows update. And the value of this key controls whether the Windows should automatically perform the auto update. And similar to file system, they also support standard interface and operations to access the registry. For example, some of the actions might include open key, enumerate key, and the query the value. And each operation will have a return status. And in this work, we call a configuration access event as the unique combination of the operation, the return value, the key, and the value. So now let's take a look at how CODE can detect the auto-update configuration error. So on Windows, there's a process called SVC host, and one of its jobs is to perform automatic update. And it is periodically invoked. And every time it is invoked, it will perform a series of checks for the Windows update setting. And it will have the following events to access the configurations to check for the settings. This include querying the location of the update server. And in particular, every time there will be these 28 event sequence happens. And once they happen, the 29th event will always be the querying the value of the auto update key, whose has always have the value of true under the normal cases. And since these 28 events always predict the 29 events, so we call these 28 events sequence events as the context of the 29th event. Then when an error happens, the first time SVC host is invoked, it will still perform the 28th event sequence. But on the 29th event, we will observe a deviation. So instead of querying the value of auto update, which is set to true, now the value of auto update is set to false. And by observing this deviation, CODE can immediately issue a warning. And please note that we only report a warning when this change configuration is first time used, instead of when the time it is changed. And in addition to the error, to the warning, we'll also provide rich diagnostic information, including what was the expected event and the expected configuration data. And this information will help administrators to roll back the configuration data to recover from the error. And also, when this when the modification happened and by which process that caused this configuration error. So now let's look at how code works. So in the high level, code consists of two modules. The event collection module will continuously monitor the system and collect all the configuration access event. And then the event sequence it collected will feed into the analysis module. And there are two phases in the analysis module. The first is the learning phase. The goal of the learning phase is to learn the rules in the format of context predicting the event. And more precisely, we call it as a rule that when every time a subsequence ABC happens, and the next event will be D, and it will follow immediately. And to learn these rules, the learning phase will first extract the frequent sequences, and based on the frequent sequences, learn the rule in the format of context predicting event. And once these rules are learned, they will be updated into a rule database. And these rules will be immediately used by the detection phase And with these rules, the detection phase is straightforward, that it will simply match the incoming events against these rules. And once it finds a deviation, it will report a warning and also provide some diagnostic information. So on the high level, we will divide the time into different epochs. At any point of epoch, the both learning phase and the detection phase will execute simultaneously. And the rules learned by the learning phase will be used by the detection phase starting from the next epoch. So let's first look at how the event collection module works. So the goal of event collection module is to monitor the OS to record all the configuration access events. And it needs to record the event sequence that faithfully follow the program's control flow. And intuitively, different programs will have different control flow, and even for the same program, different triggering input will have the different control flow. So once we get the events from all the processes, we'll first differentiate them by the process, by the different process name. And we'll further differentiate them by the different triggering input. And since we want to eliminate the undeterminism caused by thread interleavings, so we'll further differentiate them by different thread. So in the end, the event collection module will record event sequences in thread granularity. And we implement this based on our previous work, FDR, which has negligible runtime and space overhead. Once we have the input sequences, the next step in the learning phase is to learn the frequent sequence. And in this work, we used and implemented the sequator algorithm to learn the frequent sequence. So sequator algorithm has the nice property that it's a streaming algorithm, that it can learn the frequent sequence on the fly as the event arrives. And it also has a flexible pattern length that we do not need to predefine the length of our frequent sequence patterns. So I will not explain the detail of sequator, but just on the high level what it does. Now, given this input sequence, what sequator can learn is all the subsequences that are frequent, that appeared frequently. For example, AB is such a subsequence that appeared 5 times. Now, given these frequent sequences, the next step is to learn the rules in the format of context predicting event. And we implement this by first putting all the sequences into a prefix tree. And each node in this prefix tree represents an event. And each edge in the prefix tree can represent a rule edge. So for example, this edge from B to C might represent a rule that the context AB predicting C. And clearly that only those edges that are the single outgoing edge from their original node can be candidates to rule edges. However, not every candidate of rule edge is indeed represent a rule. So for example, if we have the incoming sequence in the learning phase as A, B, and E, then we'll find that it violates a rule edge from A, B, and C. Then if it occurs in the learning phase, we will immediately unmark the original edge B and C from being a rule edge. So in the end, at the end of our learning phase, for all the processes that share the same process name and the same triggering input, we will learn a single prefix tree that captures all the rules. And once we have these rules, the detection phase is straightforward, that it will match all the incoming events against this prefix tree. And here, each edge represents a rule. For example, the C and D represent a rule that ABC will always predict in D. And once we find a violation, we'll immediately report a warning. And we also use a few heuristics to suppress false positives, and they are described in detail in the paper. And then based on the warning, we further perform a series of analysis to provide the diagnostic information. First, because we already learned the rules, we know what is the expected event. And in other words, what are the configuration data that when it was normal. And this information can help the administrators to quickly recover from the error by roll back the configuration data to its old value. And furthermore, since we captured the context of the error, this context information can help the administrators to understand more about the error. And also, code captures what process that made the modification that caused the error and at what time. So we implement this by using a write buffer that captures all the last modification to the configuration data that are involved in the rules. And finally, we allowed administrators to examine the side effect if they want to roll back the configuration data to its old value. And we implement this by searching the configuration data in all the rule repository in all the other processes. So next, I'll describe how do we evaluate code. So we designed a series of experiments to mainly evaluate three aspects of code. First, how well it can detect the configuration errors. And the second, whether it generates a lot of false positives. And finally, what is the performance overhead. So to evaluate the detection capability of code, we have reproduced 20 real-world configuration errors. And these real-world configuration errors are selected from a support database that are reported by the real users. And here I will describe 11 out of them. And for these 11 errors, we'll reproduce them on 5 different machines with 5 different environments. And since not every error can be reproduced on every machine, so in the end, we successfully reproduced 42 out of them. And among these 42, code can successfully detect 41 of them, with missing only one case. And furthermore, we further evaluate the code's detection capability using random error injection. So we exhaustively corrupted every registry key that are frequently accessed by Internet Explorer. The reason we choose Internet Explorer is because it has the largest number of configuration access. So among all the 387 successfully corrupted keys, code is able to detect 97% of them. And this indicates that code can effectively detect most of the registry-related configuration errors on Windows system. But how many false positives do we generate? So to evaluate this, we have deployed code on 10 actively used user desktop machines and 8 production servers. And the deployment lasted 30 days. And in these 30 days, on average, code reports one error per every 16 days on a server machine. And on desktop machine, the number is one error every 4 days. And at least one server machine and one desktop machine report zero errors in these 30 days. And for the most number of for the machines that generate the most number of false positives, the number for the servers is around one error per 4 days. And for desktop, it's one error every day. And please also note that during this 30 days period, we also encountered 78 of software updates. So this number already included effect caused by the software updates. So the CPU overhead of code is negligible. That over 99% of time, code uses less than 1% of CPU. And the peak CPU usage is at most 25%. The current memory overhead is between 500 megabytes to 900 megabytes. And we suspect that by changing the implementation from C# to C++ might further reduce this. And finally, since one of our design goals is to use code as a centralized management tool to monitor data centers, so here we use code to monitor 8 servers that are running the similar workload. And as we can see that, when using code to monitor 8 servers, the memory overhead only increases by 7% compared to using one code process to monitor one single server. So this indicates that code can be potentially scalable to monitor large number of machines in the data center. So there are a series of related work, and I'm not going to detail of this work. I want to talk about the limitation before I conclude. So first, code cannot detect errors during the installation phase, because we require this learning period that assumes the software works correctly for a while. And secondly, our implementation is based on Windows only. Although we believe that the high-level idea can be generalized to other systems, but we imagine the key challenge would be intercepting the configuration access events on other platforms. And finally, as we show, code still have non-zero false positive rate. And this is mainly caused by our limitation that we cannot truly differentiate a user's rare intentional change from the real errors. So to conclude, we presented code, which is an automatic tool to perform online configuration error detection. It is based on the simple observation that the key configuration access events will form highly repetitive sequences. And we have demonstrated that it's both effective and efficient. Thank you.
Do we have questions?
John McCullough, UC San Diego. So you didn't have full coverage in the errors you were trying to reproduce. And then in your randomly injected errors, you also, again, didn't have full coverage. Do you have any sense for why you're missing those?
Yeah, actually, I think I have a backup slide for that. So this table shows a breakdown of the, it's not this. So the answer to your question is, indeed, we did not have full coverage. So the missing case of the real configuration error is because that code have overfitted the context. That in the learning phase, we have learned a rule that is too long than it should be. So in the detection phase, that when the error occurs, but its context is actually shorter than the one that we learned, so we cannot detect that. Yeah. I think that's the main reason for why we missed that small number of cases.
Do you think it would be feasible to address that moving forward?
Well, I would say there are two approaches that we can potentially do. So one is really from the implementation level that we can potentially change our algorithm to be more flexible to address this kind of overfitted context. On the other hand, if we have a longer learning phase so that we can observe more of the what happens in the learning phase might also help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nadav Amit, Technion. If you upgrade let's say you install a service pack, so you need to do the learning phase all over again, or can you just?
The answer is no, we do not need to redo the learning phase. So the learning phase, it continues. So even if you do an upgrade or installing some new software, the rules we learned previously will still be used to detect the errors in the new phase. And what we have experienced is that after you do a major upgrade, we will significantly experience this increasing number of new rules that are learned, but still there are a limited number of violations.
And false positives?
Yes, exactly. I think this slide is the answer to your question. So in terms of numbers, as I mentioned, there are we experienced 72 software updates in our deployment. And actually, only 5 of the warnings were caused by these software updates. And here's the detail. 2 are caused by environment variable change. 1 is display icon update, another DLL update, and 1 daylight saving time update.
Last question. Do you think a regular user can determine what the problem is, whether it's true or false, according to the outputs you give?
That's a reasonable question. So here, the user of our tool, we imagine, is more of the administrators rather than the end users who has limited knowledge of the system. Because in the end, if we do it really aggressively, we can potentially automatically recover the error, but we do not believe that is very mature yet. So the best usage is for the administrators to look at the error report and all the diagnostic information and figure out what to do about the error.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, thanks.